I must confess, actually, I'm tempted to change my views this evening and come out in favour of this law, because I practice criminal law in Liverpool, and seeing so many of you here, I can make an entire career out defending you all once this law gets passed. When I first heard about Danny Scott's case as a newspaper story, I'll be frank, I didn't believe it. I thought, well, newspapers, you know, they exaggerate, they get things wrong. So I did what any lawyer should do. I asked for the evidence. I read the Australia legislation. I read all the court papers in Danny's case, all the witness statements, the formal complaints, as it's called, that went to the Victoria Civil and Administrative Tribunal. I read a transcript of the seminar he gave. And I read transcripts of a lot of the evidence. And I've also read the judgment from the judge. What I can say, I am certain about one thing. If this law was in force, the government's proposed law, and if he was to make that seminar in this country, then he could be prosecuted under the proposed law and he could go to prison for 7 years. If he was to come along to this church and do a similar seminar, then he could be prosecuted. You two could be prosecuted. The people who run the church could be prosecuted. I think the rest of you would probably get off with a caution. I'm sure that's reassuring. Now, the supporters of this law will say, well, of course, that's not going to happen. It's only going to be used against extremists. Well, I'm a lawyer. I'm not a politician. My job is to tell you what the law can be used for. If you want to look at the Prime Minister, he smiles at you and says, trust me, and you're reassured. Well, that's fine. What is it that this law actually says? Well, for a start off, it's punishable by 7 years imprisonment. That's quite a lot. You commit the offence by using threatening, abusive, or insulting words or behaviour, or displaying any written material which is threatening, abusive, or insulting. Now, threatening or abusive is probably, you might think, okay. How about insulting? Anything that's insulting? Well, it's interesting that Iqbal Sukrani, who is the Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Britain, said in 1989, and I quote, attempting to insult the Blessed Prophet, peace be upon him, I'm giving you the exact quote, is the most serious crime in the eyes of Islamic law. The crime is considered as transgressing the limits and is worse than treason and is a capital offence. That was in 1989. On the 14th of July 2004, on the BBC programme called The Moral Maze, he said, any defamation of the character of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, should be illegal under the proposed new law. And on the Panorama programme on Sunday, he was asked about the satanic verses, and he agreed he couldn't ban the satanic verses, unfortunately, yet. That is the problem. It is what is insulting. Now, I'm a Roman Catholic. Now, quite often people say things are insulting about the Pope. Since my parish priest isn't here, I'll say sometimes I agree with them. Sometimes I don't. I argue with them. I disagree with them. Sometimes I disagree vehemently. But I don't want somebody to be sent to prison for insulting the Pope. That's argument. That's religious debate. And that's what we've got to maintain. It doesn't matter, actually, whether I agree with all of what Danny Scott said in his seminar or whether you agree with it. What matters is whether he should have the right to say it, whether other people should have the right to say it and the right to respond. It's more than just an issue of freedom of speech, because we forget the second part of freedom of speech. Freedom of speech involves freedom to listen and freedom to hear. What this is, it doesn't just stop Danny Scott speaking, it stops you hearing him. And that's the real danger of a law of this type. So you use threatening, abusive, or insulting words or behaviour, or display a written material, where, having regard to all the circumstances, the words, behaviour, or material are likely to be heard or seen by any person in whom they are likely to stir up racial or religious hatred. I'm a lawyer. I can make a lot of headway with the word likely. Almost anything is likely to happen. So, somebody can be guilty under this law without having any intention to stir up any form of religious hatred, without the prosecution having to prove that anybody has been stirred up to religious hatred. They only have to prove that it's likely. And what's the difference between likely and possible? Not a great deal, frankly. And you say, well, of course we shouldn't hate. I agree. In fact, a Catholic newspaper, which I'm having a sort of running debate with at the moment, called The Universe, who's very much in favour of this law, they stopped being so much in favour once I wrote them a letter pointing out that one of their articles could have been prosecuted under it. Which was an article by a charity called Aid to the Church in Need, which deals with Christians, especially Catholics, in Muslim and non-Christian countries. But they said, how can anybody be in favour of hatred? Well, I said, well, you know, I hate poverty, I hate war, I hate crime, I hate injustice. It depends what you hate. The idea behind this law is the idea that you can distinguish belief from believers. And that's impossible. If you insult a belief, you insult the believer. It's unavoidable. I mean, basically, if nobody believes in something, what's the point of insulting it? The only point of insulting a belief, disagreeing with it, arguing with it, is because somebody believes it. And what does hatred mean? Well, law applies a dictionary definition of hatred. Hatred means extreme dislike. This law isn't about criminalizing people because they attack, because they use violence. It's about a state of mind, what you think. It's a thought crime. The only defense under this law is that the defendant did not know that their words or behavior might be threatening, abusive, or insulting. If you actually don't know a single solitary thing about the particular religion involved, then you can say, I didn't know it might be insulting. But if you even know it might be, just might be, then you can be guilty and you can face 7 years. Danny's talked a bit about his case. If anybody wants to read all the papers on it, they're on my website, religionlaw.co.uk. But if you want to read the judgment, you can. It's on a website called the Victoria Civil and Administrative Tribunal, VCAT, V-C-A-T. Put that into an internet search engine, you go to the website, you can read the judgment, including the judgment in the case of the paedophile witch who took the Salvation Army to court because of their views about witchcraft. Because this law goes much beyond views on Islam. Every single religion, every cult, everybody is covered by this law. Satanists, pagans, the Moonies, Scientologists, believers in the second coming of Elvis. They're all equally protected as a religion or belief. And it also means every subdivision of a religion is equally protected. So how does that affect people? Well, part of the offensive in this law is possession of inflammatory material. Well, I've got a book at home called The Godmakers. It's a book about Mormonism. It's a book about, written by an ex-Mormon, about his views on the Mormon Church. He's not particularly sympathetic to the Mormon Church. Possession of that, for all I know, could be possession of inflammatory material. What happens in Christian bookshops? You see books on cults? Well, they could all be criminalized. Possession of inflammatory material. TV programs will also be covered. How did that affect you? Well, there's going to be a TV program that does documentary on the life of Muhammad coming out soon. I'm willing to bet the small amount of money that the Legal Aid Board pays me for a case, to bet that it's not going to include the incident where Muhammad had 800 Jews massacred following the Battle of the Ditch. But that's an incident of history. Muhammad is a historical character, just like Joseph Smith, the Mormon prophet, just like the popes are, just like the Catholic churches. I'm a Catholic. I have to live with the Inquisition. I have to say, yeah, that happened. My church was wrong. Will the law stop people doing television programs about the Inquisition? Somehow I suspect not. I suspect those will still be okay. But I suspect other programs will be watered down. Now, why does the government say that this law is necessary? Well, it says there's a loophole. Governments love pointing out loopholes in law. What a loophole means, what a government means by a loophole is the law says something that we disagree with. At the moment, there is a law against incitement to race hatred. Jews and Sikhs are covered by the race hatred law. And the government said, well, that's a loophole. Well, is it? Jews and Sikhs are governed by the race hatred law because of their race, not because of their religion. Under the Nazis, Jews who had converted to Christianity were still killed. There's a Roman Catholic saint, Saint Teresa Benedicta. She was born Edith Stein. She became a Carmelite nun in 1920. She became a leading Roman Catholic theologian. She stopped being religiously Jewish about as far as it's humanly possible to stop. In 1943, she was killed in Auschwitz. She couldn't stop being a Jew. And that's the difference between race and religion. The government tries to pretend that race and religion are the same. They're not. Danny and I cannot change our race. Danny could become a Muslim. He could become a Mormon. He could become an atheist. We can't become white. I can't become brown. There's nobody in history has ever changed their race. But lots of people change their religion because religion is an idea. However unlikely it might be, you may be born in a faith, you may live in it, you may die in it, but at the end of the day, it's still a choice. Until the day he dies, the Pope could become a Muslim. He has that choice. He cannot stop being a white German, but he can change his religion. That is the difference. Race and religion are not the same. Also, if the government does believe there's a loophole, and Jews and Sikhs aren't racist, well, there's a very simple way of dealing with a loophole. Amend the race hatred law to say this shall not apply to Jews and Sikhs. That's your loophole. Closed. Finished. We can all go home. But the point is, Jews and Sikhs are protected as a race, not as a religion. I'm spending a lot of time on this because this is one of the government's main arguments in favour of this law. At the moment, if, for example, I was to write an article about hardline Orthodox Jews in the Holy Land and compare them unfavourably with liberal Jews, I couldn't be guilty of any criminal offence because I've not been speaking against the Jews as a race, merely against a group, a particular religious group. The race, if the religious hatred law comes in, you could have the situation where liberal Jews are being prosecuted for incitement to religious hatred of Orthodox Jews. Balmy though that may seem, it could happen. The government says, well, don't worry. it won't be used because the only person who can authorise a prosecution is the Attorney General. In fact, actually, it makes it worse as far as I'm concerned. I was a senior Crown Prosecutor for 8 years. I had to make the decision whether or not to prosecute. It wasn't my personal decision. All right, I had to exercise my legal judgment. But I have guidelines. Big manuals of guidelines. What are the elements of what is in the public interest that I applied? You know, as with anything, there's always an area of judgment. But it wasn't my personal decision at the end of the day. By making the Attorney General the one who decides on these prosecutions, actually, it becomes his personal decision. He's a party politician. Let's say you've got a general election coming up, or an important by-election, and you get another satanic verses type situation. Think of the pressure there is going to be on the Attorney General to prosecute whoever is alleged to have defamed the prophet or whatever in that situation. Tremendous political pressure from his colleagues. But even, let's just assume, okay, we can rely upon the Attorney General. He's a gent. The Attorney General only comes in late in this day. Before then, the police investigate. The police don't need the consent of the Attorney General to investigate. The police can arrest you. They can search your property. They can seize your property. They can read it. Now, I have the highest respect for the police. I spent years working with them. They're very competent people. But they're not well trained in comparative theology. But that's what they're going to have. But that's what they're supposed to be judging. But it goes further than that. Even before you reach the stage where something might be prosecuted, there are situations where, let's say, this church was thinking of inviting Danny Scott. They know what he's going to say. So they come to me and they say, Neil, we'd like you to advise us. Could we be liable to be prosecuted if this is said in our church? Now try and think of my position. If I say, no, you're okay, I've got to be absolutely certain. Because otherwise, I could be disbarred and I could be sued. So if there's a slight chance that you might fall foul of the law, I've got to tell you that. And then I say to you, well, of course, the decision will be made by the Attorney General. And you say to me, well, you know, is the Attorney General going to prosecute? And I say, well, actually, I think he probably won't. Oh, but by the way, if I'm wrong, you could go to prison for 7 years. I don't think that's very reassuring. And that's the reality of the situation that people are going to be placed in. Newspapers, television programs, churches. They're going to have to take advice, and the lawyers are going to have to tell them, we don't know, because it's entirely a decision for the Attorney General. This law is so vague, it's so wide-ranging, it could prosecute you. You could go to prison for 7 years. And I've got to be frank, having had the recent situation where a chief constable has encouraged his officers in his force to go wandering around with green ribbons to show their solidarity in the Muslim community, I'm not entirely reassured about how the police will operate this. Some police forces will be sensible about it, some won't. Cheshire can stab you down the road. I don't know if you remember, a little while ago, Bishop of Chester gave an interview to the Chester Post about homosexuality. And he was investigated, and the police said, we're investigating this. We have to investigate every complaint. I wish they investigated every burglary, because they don't. But they have to investigate every case, complaint. And so people then start to watch what they say. They're frightened. And that's the real damning effect of this law. Not the prosecutions. It's what people don't say and don't do. That's the real fear. And it's not necessary. If I go up to a Muslim and I insult them, I abuse them, that's already a crime. If I attack them because they're a Muslim, that's a crime. If I threaten them, that's a crime. If I damage their property, if I firebomb a mosque, if I put graffiti on a mosque, if I damage their copy of the Quran, that's already a crime. If I harass a group of Muslims, that's already a crime. If I incite anybody else to do any of those things, that's already a crime. So why do we need it? Every single example that I have heard about the use of this law is already criminal. I had a letter published in the Muslim News last month where they had given an example of hate mail being sent to them, and they said, well, this would refer to the police, but of course we said, well, you can't do anything about it because religious hatred isn't a crime. And I wrote to them and I said, sorry, sending hate mail is already a crime. Section 1, Malicious Communications Act. Sending more than one, already a crime. Section 2, Protection from Harassment Act. Sending threatening emails causing you to fear violence, already a crime. Section 4, Protection from Harassment Act. If religiously aggravated, punishable by up to 2 years imprisonment. If threatening, up to 7 years imprisonment. Could you or any of your readers, please provide me with one single example of something that would be prosecuted under this law which is not already a crime? Because I haven't heard one. I haven't had any response to that letter. It was published a month ago. This year we're celebrating, that's the right word, the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II. There was a film that was brought out in 1945. Some of you might have seen it. It's called A Question of Life and Death. Well, David Niven as an RAF pilot who should have died, but he doesn't. And then when a visitor from heaven come to take him up to heaven, he said, well, sorry, things have changed, I've fallen in love in the interim. And there's a whole argument about whether he should die or not. There's a trial that takes place in heaven. In it, his advocate says, in England today, a man can think as he wish and speak as he please. That was in 1945. That was an ideal of what the war was all about. 60 years on, I'd like to think that in a way that we could still live up to that idea of this is what freedom is about, because it is freedom. It is freedom not necessarily for people to say things we like, but freedom for people to say things we dislike. Because the freedom to say things that I agree with isn't freedom. The freedom to say something the Attorney General agrees with isn't freedom. And I'll finish by quoting somebody else from 1945. It's Martin Niemöller. He was a pastor in Nazi Germany. And he said, first of all, they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I said nothing. Then they came for the communists, and I wasn't a communist, and I said nothing. And then they came for the Catholics, and I wasn't a Catholic, I was a Protestant, so I said nothing. And then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak for me. That's why I'm asking you very much to oppose this law and to make sure your MPs are aware very strongly of your opposition. We, fortunately, live in a society where we haven't had to grow up fearing the knock on the door in the night. But I fear that that's the way in which we could be heading if laws like this are brought into force.